Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Before we get started on today's episode, we just wanted to let you know how you could work with Made by Mamas as a partner.
If you listen to the podcast regularly, you'll hear that we love working with brands that we're really passionate about.
And that could be talking about a brand's fantastic products on the podcast to someone listening right now like you, giving a shout out on socials, or even hosting an event for you.
If you're listening and you'd like to hear a bit more about how we partner with brands and how we could potentially work together, we would love to chat. Send us an email to mbm@insanityhq.com. That email address is also in the podcast description too.
We can't wait to hear from you. Now let's get started on today's podcast. Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood. You know, the real conversations.
Tips and tricks.
Products we love.
And brands we can't live without.
Let's get into it. Hello and welcome to Friday's episode of the podcast. It's going to be a really interesting conversation today because when we put this out on our Instagram, the amount of questions that we got sent in, we were flooded with people saying we cannot wait for this conversation to happen. So we're very excited and we found the perfect person, founder of the SEN Expert. Her name is Claire Wally. We've got a Wally, a Hardman and a Dayton, and we're going to have a conversation. It is Claire Wally! How are you, Claire?
I'm really good, thank you. I'm really pleased to be on here, and like you said, there's a huge amount of interest in this topic. So to be able to chat to you guys today is a real honour. So thank you very much.
Just before we get into the questions, as I said, we've had loads. Do you want to just give us a little bit of background into how, I guess, you have got to where you are and like your experience in this subject?
Yeah, definitely. So I've had quite an interesting path, I suppose, career-wise. So I trained as an art teacher and went to my first ever teaching job in London, walked through the door, and I was told that I would be having a tutor group for 25 hours a week, which had 10 children with quite complex special educational needs, and that I'd be teaching 3 hours of art tapped onto that. So I swiftly changed from being, you know, with my paints ready to be all arty to actually applying that creativity to how am I going to teach these kids every single subject in a secondary school as well. So it wasn't that I was primary school trained and used to teaching all the different subjects. So that's where I started, really. I worked there for a number of years and became the SEN advisor for the key stage, so year 7, 8, and 9. And from there, I've been a deputy head of a school, assistant head, a advisor for an academy chain. And then the pandemic happened and I got pregnant during the pandemic, as probably most of the population did. Yeah. I wanted to put all of that knowledge that I'd got from all those different roles into one place, really, with the SEN Expert. And I suppose it kind of came about because I have sat in so many meetings where I really wanted to say to a parent or to a child or to a school some really kind of honest, frank advice. And I just couldn't say it because I was stuck by, I suppose, the agenda of where I worked. Whereas now, being completely independent, I can be that kind of frank, honest person being like, no, that's not right. You shouldn't have been told that. Yes, that is right. And actually help. And that's how I got here.
And Claire, special educational needs can range from anything to, you know, from, we're talking dyslexia, for example, right up till, you know, when a child may need, you know, some sort of real kind of, you know, hour by hour, minute by minute extra care in a special school that is kind of dedicated to that. Is that correct?
Yes, it's a huge, huge range of different types of needs. SEN is characterised in four areas. So you have physical difficulties, that includes hearing impairment and visual impairment. You have cognition and learning, which is anything to do with learning, basically, and retaining information. Communication interaction, which can cover things like autism, social communication difficulties, and social, emotional, and mental health.
Okay.
So back in the day when we were at school, this was kind of titled behaviour, but obviously you can't have a behaviour. Behaviour is a communication of a need. So the government have made lots of steps forward with recognising mental health and how important it is for young people. So social, emotional, mental health covers that area, which again, okay, all of them are broad and can cover many different additional needs.
Okay, amazing. George, listen, let's get into it because we've got so many people so many questions to answer. Do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, of course. Let's start with this one. My five-year-old, year one, masks his ASD and ADHD at school, meaning he kicks off more at home. Help.
It definitely is one for help. It's really tricky. And it's something really common with children with ASD is that it's really quite clever. They will read a room. They will understand kind of the social norms of that room. And then they will completely mask their own feelings and emotions to fit in. So inside they could be in complete turmoil and be highly anxious, but on face value, they look absolutely fine. Obviously, there's an obvious negative that a child is stressed but isn't showing that or communicating that. It also is tricky for parents because I have so many meetings where I'll go along and school will say, oh, but they're absolutely fine and they're doing so well. And trying to push school to give support in the classroom when actually they're presenting fine in that classroom is a bit of a challenge sometimes.
What does ASD stand for?
Autistic Spectrum Disorder.
Okay. And so what would the signs be? Like, because you're saying if, you know, children can mask it in certain situations, what would people be looking out for?
So normally if your child has got ASD, when you're having your health worker checks when they're really quite small, they would notice things that could be a nod towards an ASD diagnosis. So it's a huge spectrum, but kind of common themes are issues with sensory, so the touch of things or things like wearing clothes or uniform they find tricky. They struggle with social communication. They might look or seem like they don't have any friends, but they really don't. They don't need that as such. So you and I would want to, you know, have friends and have a social circle. For some autistic people, they have no interest in it because it's just not part of their kind of setup. So social communication can become a challenge because they can seem like they are being rude when they're not being rude. They may struggle with eye contact. They will sometimes struggle with reciprocal conversations. So it may seem like they're having a chat with you, but actually they're just rehearsing these kind of rewritten lines that they have in their head. So they would know, okay, so my teacher likes to know about my work, so I'll reel off these sentences that I've practiced and that will kind of resolve that situation. But wow, autism is a huge spectrum. You can have children that are non-verbal that need to be in really quite specialist provisions. You can have children with ASD who function really quite well in a mainstream school and only need sort of that scaffolding support. So it's a huge spectrum. With the sort of issue of masking, I think the first thing to do is to make sure that school understand that masking is part of that little boy's way of life. So it's not that he's fine. Actually, he is actively and probably getting quite tired during the day, putting on a front to make himself fit in. It's highly stressful because if you can imagine, even, you know, when you and I walk into a room, you read the room, you look at people, you try to work out who you're, you know, going to go talk to or whatever. They're doing that all the time and then trying to kind of change their presentation to fit in. So first of all, I'd recommend making sure school understand that that is what is happening. Everything isn't fine. A kind of really stressful masking activity is happening. When coming home, obviously, it's almost like having a bottle of Coke and you shake it up all day. And then as soon as you get home, they feel comfortable. So you take the top off and they have this big explosion.
Yeah.
I think it's important to recognize that behavior as being a product of masking, not a bad behavior or, oh, they're being naughty or they're being rude to me. And to give them some time to kind of decompress. So when they jump in the car after school, don't be like, what happened at school today? Who did you see? Who did you talk to? Just use that period of time in the car, say it's being really quiet, calm time. When they come into the house, have it so that you're not essentially pestering them. You're letting them get comfy, get happy back into the kind of home environment rather than bombarding them with questions. Or if behaviours happen, you're minimising them rather than shouting back and saying, you know, oh, you need to behave, because they need time to relax from this highly stressful period of time. And if you can give them that over time, hopefully the level of kind of meltdown at home will reduce. And if school are aware as well, they could maybe factor in some breaks during the school day where they can go to, say, a sensory room, or go even just go for a walk around the school site just to have a moment of calm before they go back into essentially what is a 6-hour performance in front of their classmates.
Mm. And actually, I think it's fine to flag those things to the teacher. Like, I think at drop off, it can be a little bit chaotic. You know, you're just trying to get your kid into the classroom without them crying or without, you know, and then you forget to have those conversations. You know, I have two children that don't have, you know, special needs, but Kit was so knackered the other day, and I just said to his teacher, I just said, he's really exhausted, he's been up half the night, and he just went, I'm just going to go for a sleep, and he just took himself off to the other side of the classroom and just lay down. He was down there for like an hour. He just needed some time out, and they were really really responsive to that. So I think it's really important to have those open and honest conversations. Yeah, I think at drop off. How to support friends who are parents of a child with additional needs.
This is a really good one, because I think as a friend of someone with a child with additional needs, or even myself as, you know, a professional working with parents who have children that may have additional needs, it's really tricky because you don't want to say the wrong thing. As we touched upon before we came on the podcast, this is kind of a world full of acronyms, and you don't want to be using the wrong term for the wrong condition or offending anyone. I think the best thing you can do is just to be there. And not be there in terms of trying to organise loads of play dates or trying to like always invite them out for dinner or whatever, but just to be there so that they know that if they're having a really rocky time, you'd be at the end of the phone for a quick WhatsApp message, for that kind of emotional support for the parent. And I think also with regards to interacting with their child, with your own children maybe, children are amazing at supporting each other. They are the most inclusive people that you will come across, because they don't have preconceptions. They just accept people on, you know, who they are and how they're acting. So I wouldn't kind of see it as a negative this if a parent is saying, oh, I don't really fancy going to the park with you today with my child, because there'll be a backstory to that, and it'll be probably because they're worried that they're not going to be able to cope with the, I don't know, sensory overload of being in a crowded park.
Right.
So if you let the parent direct what they want the social activities to be, and even if it's something that might not be the most appealing to your child, the interaction that they'll have with the other child will be really, really quite positive, I think. So I think it's be there and kind of quietly support, as opposed to being like, I haven't seen you for ages, let's go for dinner, come on, you need a break. But actually that might not be feasible, because it doesn't factor into that kind of, you know, their style of childcare is very different to yours.
Yeah, actually that leads us on to this question. How do we help children with non-SEND children understand SEND children? Like, a lot of, like you say, so many cope really well in mainstream schools, but how do we explain that to, you know, children who don't have those needs?
Well, there's kind of two ways of thinking about it. Teachers and schools themselves can do so much work in this area, and then also parents. So from a teaching perspective, I did loads of work when I was actually working as a deputy head and making my student body as inclusive as possible. So if a child had a question about a need, we just answered it. We weren't saying, oh, don't be mean to so-and-so, or don't point out that there's a difference. We'd say, yes, there is a difference here, and this is because of X, Y, Z. We used to do loads of events in school that were all focused around special needs. So there's a really lovely film called Life Animated, which is about an autistic boy who was nonverbal, but then he learns to speak by watching Disney films. So he was repeating the sentences in the Disney films to then communicate what his needs were. And honestly, every time I watch it, it makes me cry, because at the end he stood at his university graduation saying he's a proud autistic man. So we did a screening of it in school and got all the kids in, they gave them all popcorn, and then they we made like a real hype about it, and then they just watched the film, and then you can just see that kind of organically flowing through the conversations that they're having, because they're like, oh well, so and so in year 9's got autism and he does this, and it just makes it something you talk about rather than something that you're like hushing down. And I think too often as adults we're like, oh no, don't say that, or don't offend people. And I think from a parent point of view, again, it's just make it part of the conversation.
Yeah.
I was with my friend's little boy the other day and we saw a lady in a wheelchair and he said, why is she in a chair with wheels on? And it made perfect sense. He didn't understand. So we just explained to him why, whatever reason that might be. And then he was like, oh, okay, fine. And it's understood and moved on. Whereas if we were to say to him, oh no, don't, you know, don't point, don't make a scene. Every time he sees somebody who's in a wheelchair, that's going to be like, what's that mean? Well, why is that happening? So the biggest thing is talk about it. There's so much stuff on the TV as well at the moment. TV shows that are really inclusive, people with additional needs being, there's a guy on CBeebies who presents called George. He's amazing. Mm-hmm. He's got Down syndrome. Even in kind of, you know, more adult TV, there's loads of people now with additional needs who are acting alongside everybody.
Just about
else,
having those conversations, isn't it, Claire? And I think that's the big thing. There's so much historical kind of awkwardness and kind of uncomfortableness around it for whatever reason. And that's just not the way we want to live any longer. I mean, definitely not. It's just like every conversation has to be on the table. And like you said, you know, our children, we have to encourage them to ask the questions and to look and point and see and say, oh, what's that? And then we can have the chat about it. There's a little boy in Luna's class who's got additional needs, and they have the most beautiful friendship. And she often comes home and says, oh, you know, he loves stroking my hair, and then he tells me that he loves me, and we just sit together for ages, and I know that I make him calmer. And they've obviously had those like, it's just beautiful, just a beautiful friendship. But
they have a room at school where it's, you know, some children with the additional needs can go and have their lunch in a quiet time, and they don't have to go in the playground. They can colour, and I think sometimes they'll get to pick someone, you know, to go in there with them. And Axel said he went in with a little boy the other day, and I was like, oh, like, I didn't actually know what it was. So I was like, oh, how come you went in there? And he went, oh, he doesn't like to play in the playground with lots of noise. And he said, actually, I don't really either. And I was like, oh, that's good. And he went, yeah. He says, so we don't really talk to each other in the playground, but we talk to each other in that room because
that's lovely.
Have some peace and quiet. And I was like, oh, that's actually really nice. You kind of get it. Like, you understand that in a, you know, in a playground environment, he's not going to want to play with you, which is fine. But then in a quiet room, you can actually get on and you can find some common ground because neither of you like noise. So there we go.
And there's so much stuff that works for SEN children that works just for every child. It's not some sort of magic list of instructions for one specific child. Actually, if you think about all of our children's needs, a lot of them are just the same as SEN children's. Just means that there might be, you know, slightly heightened because of their needs. So yeah, it works for everyone.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets, featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OSEAMalibu.com, code MOM.
Welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Now, where were we? There's just a lovely little statement here. A massive thank you from a mum of an autistic, lively five-year-old. I'm exhausted.
It's definitely parenting a child with additional needs can be a challenge, but it also, as you've touched upon, brings so many different kind of lovely bits as well. And because you are, I suppose, worried that they're going to struggle, when they do achieve things, it's just so much better and so much more rewarding. But yeah, that's a really nice comment.
Mm. Here's a question. This is from Victoria. I've got zero confidence in mixing with other mums or kids with my son. How do I get myself out there?
This is a really good question. I can completely see where she's coming from. Even, you know, when I had my daughter walking into like baby sign language, I was like, oh God, this is really nerve-wracking. And if your child's got additional needs, you've got that kind of worry as well that, oh, are people going to say something that might be upsetting, or are people going to be accepting? Luckily, loads of children's centres or children's clubs are being a lot more inclusive these days and are offering sessions that are SEN friendly. I do a lot of work with some parent clubs in London, and they have specific classes that are for SEN children and their parents. So they're a nice place to start, because you're going in with people that have had a similar sort of lived experience to you. And also off the back of that, you end up building these little networks. And that's what you need, I think, as a parent of a child with SEN, is that you can't necessarily ping out a question to your school friends who've all got kids and say, this has happened, what do I do? Because their experience might be totally different. Whereas going to those SEN specific sessions, you start building your kind of tribe, I suppose. And it's a tribe of parents that have lived the same, I don't know, experiences with you in terms of your child's behaviour, your child's medical needs, or you know, how many times you have to get up in the night because you're absolutely exhausted. So they are a really nice place to start, and they're a little bit less daunting than going into, you know, those parenting classes, not parenting classes, kind of children's groups where you're thinking everyone is judging me. Because I thought that when I was walking in, and if you have a child who's got additional needs, that's just going to be, you know, 10 times worse. So I think seek out places that are that do have these inclusive clubs, because they are great. And I've been working done three sort of bits of work with three separate clubs here in London. So there's definitely happening, and places are seeing the importance of offering, say, autistic friendly sessions or cinemas that are kind of doing it as well. There's so much out there.
I was going to say, or if not, you could set up your own one, you know, like
you could,
a local mum group, and just say, oh, is there anyone else out there, you know, who's going through this? And I'm sure there will be. No need to isolate yourself.
No, absolutely not. This is from Becca. This made me feel really sad reading this, actually. How to come to terms with the fact that my child may always be nonverbal and not live independently.
Yeah, it's a real tough one. I think I do a lot of work with parents during the time when their child is being diagnosed. And sort of the main thing I say to them is that if you are going to receive a diagnosis, it doesn't change who your child is. It literally is a label. And that label doesn't mean anything. It means that maybe you could Google something and be a bit more specific. But ultimately, your child is who they are. And that is, you know, that's their little personality. And it's hard to see it, because obviously you're comparing to other children or friends' children. But a child who is nonverbal is going to communicate with you in so many other ways. And I have lots of parents who I work with their children when they're quite young, and then I see them through to kind of teenagehood and then off to sort of adulthood. And we always have these conversations when they're sort of like 18, 19. And I'm like, do you remember when they were seven and you thought this? And the parent just sort of like, I can't believe that how far they've come and what a kind of amazing young adult they're turning into. And although it's really tricky at that point of kind of first diagnosis, that realization of like, you know, my journey is going to be different to my friends or my family's parenting journey. Ultimately, communication through words is one tiny piece of how we communicate with each other.
Yes.
And it's probably going to be a challenging journey, but finding your way through that kind of communication journey non-verbally is going to really form a super tight relationship with your child, as opposed to being, you know, other children who are able to communicate verbally, but might not have a connection on a kind of, I don't know, sensory level, or on a kind of thinking about eye contact or using things like Makaton and communication devices.
Yeah. And also just from a sort of human perspective, because obviously I have no idea what that moment on that diagnosis feels like, but from a human perspective to this person that sent the message in, it's absolutely okay to feel all of the feels and everything that you are going through. You know, you can scream, you can shout, you can cry, go and speak to somebody about it. You can feel, you know, it's okay. However you are feeling is okay.
Yeah.
You know, like there are going to be really shit days and there are going to be great days, and that's the journey that you've got ahead of you. We are here for you. We're wrapping love around you from a distance, basically.
Yeah.
This is from Mel. My child has sensory problems. How do I get help or a diagnosis?
So actually lots of children are do have issues with sort of sensory difficulties. And again, it's a huge range. It can range from the feel of your clothes against your skin. It can link to food and eating and kind of the physical act of eating, things like noise, light, those type of things. So there's a couple of ways where you can get support. You can book to see a occupational therapist. This is someone who would be able to look at your child's sensory profile and see where they may have triggers. Or you can go to just go to the GP and mention what you're seeing, and they would refer you to a community paediatrician. The community paediatrician is a really great service. It's almost like a big umbrella over all of the different services that a child might actually access. So the community paediatrician would be able to refer you to the right team who would be able to support you. There are loads of ways that you can assist a child with sensory processing disorder or sensory difficulties just at home without any kind of medical help. And it's about learning, I suppose, what their sensory diet is. So what upsets them in terms of tactile touch? Is it that when they have their top button done up at school that it's causing them to feel stressed? Can you talk to school about not doing that? Is it because they don't like the feeling of, I don't know, their bed sheet? Just change the type of bed sheet that you use. So actually, it can feel really challenging when you first delve into the world of sensory issues. But actually, once you kind of work out the sensory diet that your child may have, you just have to kind of, I suppose, mitigate those bits out of their day-to-day life. But an OT can give you some more information, and your GP as well.
This is actually a really interesting question. How do you deal with wraparound care for special schools with no after-school club? I actually know quite a few parents at Axel School who are having the same sort of troubles because, you know, their children don't necessarily settle well in after-school club and breakfast club, but they, you know, have full-time jobs and they, you know, need to earn money, but they can't be there. What would your advice be?
It's a tricky one, that kind of balance between, school finishes at 3 and then everyone else's jobs carry on, and it's a definite mismatch. In the last few years, there's been a real shift, I think, in childcare services realizing that children with special needs are out there and they need to be looked after, and sometimes in a particularly, you know, quite specialist way. So I have done some work in the past with a childcare app that actually has a specific section where you can select your child's special educational need, and then they match you up with, say, an after school nanny or a small group that are, you know, the person is trained.
What app is that?
The Koro Kids.
I know, I've heard of it. Yeah. Oh, amazing.
I did some stuff with them a few months ago now, and it's so good. You can literally, I was fiddling around with it. You can type in your child's name, list what needs they have, and then it will filter down all the nannies that have the appropriate training. And some of them are nannies or babysitters, but some of them are childminders with small groups. So that makes that
That's
kind of
so good.
You know how suddenly childcare is like on your phone and food tapped and you've got a babysitter. I really like the way that they're making that inclusive and it's not something inaccessible to children with additional needs. So that's one option. Also, I think schools are getting a lot better when it comes to after school provision. I think a lot of children in special schools are often taxied to and from school, and that kind of limits it because it's like, you know, the taxi's arrived and you've got to head off home then. But I think schools do really good jobs in terms of after school clubs. But if that doesn't work, then hop on the apps and have a look, because they're getting so much better now, and you're able to really kind of look at the nannies or babysitters' qualifications. You can see pictures of where like their rooms where they would be playing or being supported. I was really impressed when I saw that, because it was like, finally we've got one option that would
really
work for
good.
Everybody.
Really good. Because I mean, that's difficult even if, you know, your children haven't got special educational needs. Amazing. Are there any additional employment rights as an SEM parent?
This is a really interesting one. So if you are a parent of a child with additional needs, you legally can request flexible working from your employer, which ultimately you're going to need, because a child with additional needs is going to have so many more appointments. You may have situations where they struggle getting, into school and you need to drop them off late, or they might have an issue at school, say, and you have to go and collect them. So you can request flexible working. Obviously, that is based on what your employer would do. But there's is such a big kind of buzz around flexible working, and actually realizing that probably half the population are parents, so we can't just demand them to be in an office, say, from 9 to 6 and that's it. So that's a really positive one. And the fact that your child has additional needs will add much more evidence to your request. If your child has a high level of need, or certain needs, say autism, for example, you can register yourself as a carer, because essentially you are you're providing not just parental care, but in some cases medical care, all sorts of different kind of responsibilities stick their head up, which wouldn't happen normally, say, if you didn't have a child with additional needs. If you are a carer, there are so many things that you can tap into. Again, flexible working, you can look at getting a carer's allowance, which gives you, you know, a bit more extra money to support those extra things that you might be having to buy, or additional care that you might be able have to pay for example. So I would recommend checking out flexible working with your employer, but also, do you qualify to be a kind of registered carer? Because you might do, based on the level of need that your child has.
Well, how to cope with judgment from others, or fear of judgment?
This comes up so often when I'm talking to parents. I think the fear of judgment happens a lot quicker than the actual judgment does, if that makes sense. I think going into a room, say, with a group of children and their parents is really unnerving, and you're going to be worried that they're thinking, you know, X, Y, Z about your child. But at the moment, it's a really exciting time, I think, in the world of SEM, because everyone is aware of how important it is to be inclusive. And everyone is kind of, I think, on a real kind of buzz of, you know, we need to be accepting, we need to be understanding additional needs, not excluding people or ignoring it or kind of brushing it under the carpet. So I think, I know it's hard, but try to go into, say, I don't know, the toddler group with your head held high, ready to have a nice time, and try not to have those anxieties. And then if you are in a situation where somebody is being judgy, the best thing you can do is educate them.
Yeah.
One, because they're going to learn something new. But two, you're going to also be kind of calling them out as an adult and a parent, being like, you need to kind of improve the way you're thinking about this, or the way you're speaking, because actually you are, you know, you're teaching your own children to not be inclusive. And I imagine it would be a bit embarrassing if someone actually was to say, you know, actually you're incorrect there and you need to be more inclusive. And I think if someone ever said that to me, I would make sure I was the most inclusive person going. I think educating people in sort of almost like drip feeding it is a really nice way of doing it as well. So I don't know, you might be at the park and something might happen. You say, oh, my daughter is likely to have this reaction because she's got autism, or my son is going to find that, I don't know, task of tricky because they have got dyspraxia or whatever. And yeah, just drip feeding it in so it becomes normal, rather than feeling that you as an SEM parent have to sit all the parents down and give them like an hour long presentation on what,
yeah,
you know, each condition is. Just make it part of day-to-day conversation. And hopefully educate them along the way as well.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say actually as well. If you know you're a parent of a reception child, or you've started at a new school, there's obviously always like the group WhatsApp. And quite often, like, I've noticed that if someone new joins and their child has got like special educational needs, they'll just be like, oh hi, I'm such and such's mum, just FYI, like he or she has this, if your child mentions that they've done this at school or whatever, any questions, like, give me a shout. That's what they, and you think, oh, that's great, because sometimes, you know, you might think, oh, Axel could come home from school and be like, oh, such and such bit me or something. And as a parent, you'd think, oh my goodness, I can't believe someone's bit you. This. And then actually, if you just know, oh, you would react in a different way to the child as well. So then it's helping the whole situation, and it's helping everybody.
Definitely.
People just know and understand like what their needs might be and what their behavior might be like, and why they might react to certain things.
Definitely. And just make it normal. It is normal. So many people in, you know, society in the UK have additional needs in different ways, and it, you know, it's not something rare and really unusual. It's part of day-to-day life, so just make it as normal as possible.
And so many people are discovering that they have like extra additional needs. Later on in life, I see so many people saying, oh, I've just had my diagnosis for ADHD, and they're in their mid-30s, and they've always wondered why their brain hasn't worked in a certain way, and they've always been really hard on themselves, and now they're like, now it all makes sense and I feel so much better.
Often it comes with parents who are seeking help with their own children, and then they're kind of like, oh, I've got a diagnosis for my child, but now actually, yeah, I think it might be something that marries true with me as well. So you get these kind of families being diagnosed as opposed to just a child. Yeah.
And everybody's individual. So everybody has their own individual needs anyway, don't they? Yeah. So many people just saying, like, thank you for doing this. Somebody's put here, this is Kirsty. My son can't concentrate and he's always in trouble for it. He's misunderstood and also anxious. What can I do?
I think the first thing to do would be to reach out to his school, Senko. Their job is to strategically manage the provision for the special needs children in that school. But part of that role is diagnosing and kind of identifying children that might have struggles. So rather than him being seen as, say, you know, the naughty boy that can't concentrate, you know, see that behavior as a communication of a need, and that need needs to be investigated. And that is what Senko would do. So they might ask the teacher to provide some information. They might go and do some observations. They might have a meeting with mum. And it's almost a bit of a kind of detective journey, and you're going through kind of looking for clues of what this lack of concentration could mean. The Senko has got a huge raft of professionals that they can call upon for advice and assessment. And I think starting that journey means that, one, you'll potentially get some answers as to why he can't concentrate, but two, it also will give him, a silly way of putting it, but almost like a bit of protection in school. So he's not always getting told off constantly for not concentrating, because actually there is, you know, the Senko is working with that child and trying to find out what is causing them not to concentrate. So it would mean that hopefully his school experience would be a bit nicer rather than that constant, you know, I'm getting told off and I don't understand why. And often, you know, SEN children's journeys start off that way. But whatever behavior they're showing, they are trying to communicate something to you. Being naughty isn't a thing. It is a way of communicating. So I would link up with school and ask them to help you unpick what that communication is.
I really love that you say that being naughty isn't a thing and it's just a way of communicating. Because I think that probably happened when we were at school.
Yeah.
You know, the naughty kids actually just needed some help and a bit
of
someone to understand them. Anybody listening, if you're going through that, then there is so much support out there. I think we'll wrap there, actually, because I think we've covered lots of topics.
Yeah, it's really good that so many people sent questions in.
Yeah.
I think sometimes people feel worried or almost a bit kind of embarrassed, but yeah. I think it's best just to talk about it.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, make it normal.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Claire.
That's okay. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for finishing off that podcast, George. I obviously had to nip off there.
That's all right.
But what a great chat and so many amazing questions.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And we do really hope that that's been helpful to anyone who is going through any of the issues that we mentioned in that podcast. It's, you know, it's never easy, but I'm hoping that, you know, us providing a platform for these experts to answer your questions is useful. And obviously these Friday Q&As are for you, so any feedback would be great.
And even if you don't have, you know, a child, you know, who requires that sort of special educational needs stuff, you might have a friend whose kid is going through something similar, in which case you can pass a podcast on to them. So and also just, you know, learning the language and learning how to support somebody that needs a little bit of extra help. So that's, as Georgia said, that's what these Friday Q&As are all about, when we get an expert involved. So Georgia, let's kick off our products for the week. You start us off.
Yeah, I think I'm going to start us off. This is actually like a series of books. So Axel is in year two now, and so he can read, you know, quite well and on his own. But he really doesn't enjoy reading the school books. He just doesn't. I mean, to be honest, some of them are really boring. And it did worry me because, you know, you're always told about the importance of reading. They need to be reading. And my dad was a headmaster, he's retired, but he said to me, listen, it doesn't matter what they're reading as long as they are reading. So I started buying him things that he's really interested in. So we subscribe to the Match of the Day magazine, he reads that all the time, but he also reads the Marcus Rashford book. So there's one called You Are a Champion, there's another one called You Can Do It, and then there are also like some stories. So there's one like about a breakfast club, and he will happily, they're chapter books, he will happily sit in bed, read those before he goes to sleep, puts a bookmark in. And it's actually nice because I guess it just teaches them that reading can be enjoyable,
can be fun.
And it's not like a task that you just have to tick off.
I don't know about you, George, but I remember when we had to do we had to read one of the Hardy books. I think it was called The Mayor of Casterbridge at school, right? And I was like an avid reader. And I remember thinking, kill me now. And then obviously, you know, a Jilly Cooper novel, I'd be all over. Probably not the age of 14, but like...
I mean, we are talking about you.
Not for the year twos or the year tens, but, you know, like what my point was, it was like I loved reading, but when I was forced into reading that, it was so heavy.
Exactly.
I didn't enjoy it. I lost the love for it. So, yeah. From books to LeapFrog LeapStart learning system, which I used on Luna, but obviously now Kit has just started school. He absolutely loves it. It's just got loads of little kind of like games and things that they can do to kind of test their reading, identify shapes, colours, you know, numbers, letters, all that kind of stuff. And he just sits there in the evening. It's got like a little pen attached to it, battery operated, and it just keeps him entertained. It's not like an iPad. It's actually like a sort of, it looks like a book, but with like an iPad.
Yeah, it's got a pen, hasn't it?
Pretty good.
They love a gadget.
Yeah,
they do love a gadget. This is actually a reading program I used for Axel because before he started school, we were in lockdown, so he wasn't at preschool anymore. And so we started using Reading Eggs, and I really do rate it. And I'm going to start probably with Gigi in January, maybe, like getting her to have a little look at it on the iPad. They feel like it's a treat because they're on the iPad, like playing a game, but actually they don't realize that they're learning like their sounds and their, you know, their letters and all that kind of stuff. It's a really good program. It's not just for like preschool age kids, it goes all the way through. So definitely check that out. There's always offers as well, so yeah, it's a good
one. And then the final product today, which is something that we bought about a year ago, was a whiteboard for the kids' rooms, and they love it. We've got whiteboard markers. Luna and Isla actually teaching Kit now how to read and write. It's so cute. I find them upstairs playing school together.
I'm like, oh,
it's so cute, and it's just lovely. It just encourages Kit to pick up a pen and practice how he holds it and practices letters and stuff. So yeah, it's been really lovely. I just got mine from Amazon. It came next day, and yeah, great. Right, that's it for this week. Thank you so much for all of your questions that you sent in. Again, we really hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you do have time to rate, review, subscribe, and give the podcast a little follow, that would be amazing.
Yeah, and any feedback on the podcast or any topics you'd like us to cover, our DMs are open. We're on @MadeByMummers, and we'll be back on Tuesday. Made by Mummers is an Insanity podcast production, and today's episode was produced by the lovely Charlotte Mason.
Insanity Group.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.